All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What the fucksters? What's happening? How are you doing? How's your COVID? How's the COVID? How are you handling your COVID? Are you through the tunnel? What's happening? I'm just asking that because I got to assume at least half of you has gotten the COVID. But I am, what is it now? 2 weeks and 2 days out from my positive test. And that was a day after I felt a little shitty and had a negative test. I feel okay. I feel like I'm through the tunnel. But I don't know. The more I talk to people, the more similar the reactions and symptoms are. Well, but let's not do that right now. Let me tell you about who's on my show today. Sam Richardson is here. Sam Richardson. He's Richard Splett from Veep. He's longtime friends with Tim Robinson and created the series Detroiters with Tim. He also is on Tim's sketch series, I Think You Should Leave, which I am surprised I like. But that guy, Tim Robinson, kind of fascinates me. But I'm sure I'm projecting a lot into it. Because if you watch his characters, or the sort of the character he does in all his sketches, you're sort of like, what the fuck is up with that guy? It's like a Tim Heidecker situation. Then you meet them and you're like, oh, you're just a guy. You're a guy that, you know, that does things that aren't necessarily who you are. I think that's it. I do know that I pestered Sam a bit too much, I think, about Tim. I was like, so you know this Tim guy? So why don't you tell Tim to come on here? What's Tim doing? I kind of hate when I do that, but I'm mildly fascinated with Tim Robinson. You wouldn't think it's my kind of comedy, but it kind of is. So Sam's in this new murder mystery series, The After Party. That's on Apple TV. I watched a couple of those to get the flavor of what it is. It's kind of a Knives Out, kind of a Clue thing, you know? What are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do with your life if you had a choice? Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Where is there to run? Where is there to hide? Is hiding necessary? That's the one big question. I think I've asked this before. It's like, hey, man, you know, we got to figure out how to survive the apocalypse. Why? Who wants to live in that fucking bullshit world? Couple of things. I watched Kamau Bell's 4-part Bill Cosby documentary, which I think is an important thing to watch to really kind of, you know, understand the context and framework and history and the sort of move along the historical lines of Bill Cosby's career and the impact he had on the culture and on the black community. And also to look at the timeline of when these rapes happened. But I think the most important thing that Kamau's documentary does is give the victims a lot of time. The victims that he chose to talk to or that wanted to talk to him, or I don't know how the, you know, he decided or how it was booked, but there are several victims who did not know each other. A lot of them did not want to tell anybody because no one would believe them. Then they had the same story. But to really hear those stories told and fleshed out and lived through again through the narrative of the victim is a powerful thing that leaves no room for any sort of speculation. But it is an important thing to watch. To really, you know, put Cosby into context and then hold him accountable, at least in your own mind. So you know, whether you're, most people know that he's guilty, but it's just sort of like how, like, what does that mean when you really look at the numbers? There's a lot of attention paid to the victims, the number of victims, the timeline of the victims, alongside of where his career was at. So it really gives you a full sort of picture of the arc of Cosby and the knowledge that the raping was going on throughout the entire arc. And then how do you deal with that? How do you deal with, you know, Kamau is wrestling with it throughout the thing. And at the end, you know, how do you sort of accept or not accept Cosby for what he was in a good way against accept and process the fact that he was a predatory rapist. Yeah, it was no easy trick, and I thought that the doc was effective, and I like Kamau, and I should actually text him to congratulate him, and then I'll text Godfrey and ask him, like, why so much Godfrey in this documentary? In other news, now I'm not bragging and, you know, I'm not tooting my own horn, but I, you know, I am fortunate to be sort of a mid-level celebrity and a kind of a low-level influencer, I guess, whatever that means. Either way, this is not a paid plug, but it's something that happened. I was given a Oklahoma Joe's Bronco drum smoker. It looks like almost like a sort of a vault-like garbage can with a thermometer on it and like an oven lid. And it's an impressive looking thing. But I took the opportunity to take it from them because I've been using this Traeger, a pellet grill, which is sort of a suburban smoker in a way, which is not bad, but it requires zero skill. Not that, you know, I'm not going to go down some sort of smoker rabbit hole. You know, I'm pretty basic, but I'd like to be able to use the thing I have for what it is. I'm not going to, you know, start working towards competing with my ribs. I'm not going to enter the world championship pulled pork playoff. I'm not going to enter the brisket bowl, you know, and go through elimination rounds with my slabs of meat. But I do enjoy some smoked food sometimes. And I've had that Traeger. I used the fuck out of that Traeger, man. You know, I cook chickens in there. I cook steaks in there. I cook chickens and steaks in there. Oh, and I smoke fish. I use it all the time, though. It's very easy to use. You do it from your phone. But this other smoker is like, I had to like learn, I had to season it, and I had to learn how to situate the coals so it would cook all day. I just, basically what happened is, a couple days after I seasoned the fucking thing, I just was like, I'm gonna buy a brisket. I live alone, man. And I was at Whole Foods. I'm like, you got any briskets back there? Because there was none in the case. And she pulled out a whole brisket with the flat and the point. You know, it's about probably 20 pounds of meat. And I bought the whole goddamn thing. So now I'm stuck with it. I got like 20 pounds of meat. And I'm like, all right. So I just spent all this money to learn how to do this. So I just did it. I did a little research. I rubbed it down like Franklin does, like Aaron Franklin does, just salt and pepper. I let it be rubbed down overnight. Then I took it out, got down to room temperature, figured out how to light the coals so it would, you know, go for 10 hours. And then I just stayed on top of that shit. I sprayed it. I got a new thermometer that will register the inside of the smoker and also the inside of the meat. And I just watched that fucker. It smoked out in like 8.5 hours, though. Like, I wrapped it at 6 because Aaron said so. Aaron's a genius. So I wrapped it in the wax-free butcher paper at 6. And you just got to stay on top of that, you know, so because you got to work those dampers, the air intake to control the temp, the slow smoke. Got to be on top of it. I mean, I sat there and watched it for longer than probably necessary. But and then when I took it out, I thought like, nah, it looks a little burnt, looks a little dark. But God damn, that was some world-class meat. I invited my buddy Dan and his wife Jen over at Spontaneously, and Kit was here, and they came, and I'm like, I don't know what's going to be like, but there's got to be some great meat in there. From the outside, I can't tell. And we cut that open. It was so moist and perfect and professional seeming. It was so fucking good. I don't know if I can do it twice, but now I'm sort of like, I still got the other half, but there's not enough fat on the flat to really do it right. That's more of a juice style brisket event. That's a, you know, oven and you know, liquid brisket. That's a Jew brisket style, not smoker non-Jew brisket style. Anyways, I just wanted to let you know that I was proud of myself a couple times this last week. I'm very proud of about the interview with Tony Kushner that you heard on Monday, and I was proud of this slab of meat, and I can feel it. I can feel the fat coursing through my heart right now. It was a big fat week, a couple of big fatty meals, and I made a chess pie. That was for Kit's birthday. It was belated, and I'd just gotten down to my fighting weight, but hey, I think hopefully those statins are working. Hopefully the statins will hold. They'll hold. All right. So Sam Richardson, nice guy, interesting backstory that involves another country, which is always nice to talk about. The first three episodes of The After Party are now streaming on Apple TV Plus. New episodes premiere on Fridays. And this is me talking to Sam. Yeah, I guess it being a vet would be kind of brutal. Because every day, you're just sort of like, it's time.
Like, you're seeing animals at their worst. Like, when people are the scaredest. Nobody's bringing their pet in because, like, hey, just...
And they can't talk to fucking animals. You know? And, you know, it's just like... And everyone wants answers. I started crying in front of this vet the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't expect to.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, it's also, like, your relationship with your pet is, like, not with anything. Because it's an unconditional love thing, you know?
So you don't even really know how deep it is until that. But I just was not ready to be in hospice again.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you know, I had two cats go. And I was like, it was... I just didn't want to have to deal with a dying cat for another two or three. Because once they start going, that could go on for a while.
Right, right.
And then that's your life, figuring out how to get the idiot to eat pills.
Exactly. Like, we pill Gus every morning.
You do?
Yeah. Well,
the old guy.
The old guy does. Yeah. Our the new one, his name is Conan. He adopted us.
Yeah.
So he lived outside, and, like, we put a little thing out for him on the porch upstairs. So he, like, just lived outside until he came in.
Yeah.
And so, like, now he's running around. So it's also about, like, maintaining that he doesn't eat Gus's food.
Oh, no, why? Because is it medicine food?
It's medicine food for his kidneys.
It's a fucking, you know? Yeah, I have that. Yeah, I do that.
Yeah.
Kidney food.
Kidney food.
How often do you have? How bad are the kidneys? Is he drinking a lot of water?
He's drinking a lot of water. Ugh. Yeah, and then, you know, a puke every here and there.
It's the worst. Well, the kidney. Is she going to do the fluids? What's going on?
I don't think so. I don't know. I think we're trying to avoid that. But he's on, like, this steroid, which so he was skinny, but now he's gained a lot of weight. Good weight, I think.
Yeah.
Unless it's like another thing for, like, unless it's like a tight gut, then it's another problem.
I know. But you're all right.
Yeah, all right. Because he sleeps in the bed every morning and, like, wakes me. He slaps me awake every morning.
Yeah.
So, like, I have my check-in time with him every day.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. All right.
As long as that keeps on happening.
And that cat you've known for a while.
I've known that cat for a while, yeah.
So, yes, you did a movie with a woman I was married to.
Oh, yes, Werewolves Within.
Yeah, and who hates when I talk about her.
Oh, really?
And hates me. But your experience with her was okay.
It was nice. I'm sure a different context for me.
No, but you were a producer on that as well?
I was, yeah.
And the star of it? It's based on a video game?
Based on a video game. Adapted by your ex-wife, into a screenplay, and then we made that, and we filmed that in February of 2020, and so we wrapped it, and then everything shut down as soon as we wrapped,
like the next month,
like the next week.
Oh wow,
you know,
yeah. Did anyone have COVID on there?
No. Well, not that we knew,
right?
Because if they did, it was like, oh, it's a cold,
right?
You know?
Right,
or a flu,
right?
So it was before it researched. In fact, like in a zombie movie, I'd have the TV on the back, and they'd be like, "Oh, talking about this big flu pandemic." And I'm like, "Okay, you know,
right."
Like, "Oh, 8 cases in America."
Yeah, yeah. And you're like, wait, what? And then, yeah. So then it was in the can for how long before?
Then we're just able to edit it while,
and you were part of the whole process.
Yeah, but like not directly, like not in the editing room. But
a lot of funny people in there. Michaela's
in it.
She's so funny.
Yeah. George Basil, is so funny. Everybody in that movie is just so funny. Harvey Guillen,
Fun, right?
Yeah,
but so it got 1 week in the theaters. When no one was going,
exactly.
and then it ended up where?
VOD.
Oh, okay.
I think it just hit Canada Netflix, just hit UK Netflix.
Oh, that's exciting.
So, you know, hopefully,
was it on American Netflix?
Mm-mm, nope,
not yet.
Not yet. So rental, you can rent it.
Yeah. How does that work, though? Are you hip to how it works now that you're a producer?
Not entirely, even still. Like, because I'm like, hey, can you shoot me an email and let me know what's going on? Yeah, yeah. And it's like, yeah, here. And I'm like, I don't know.
Well, you've done enough shit to where you have things out there. You're like, can you still get that?
Yeah.
You know, truly. When people are like, where can I see that movie? I don't know.
I'm like, I'm not sure, truly.
I don't know if you can. It's so weird, man.
It's a moment in time. You know, yes, they had to be there when.
You can pretty much go like, well, yeah, I think you can get it on iTunes. You can
That's what I say.
It. Yeah.
That's what I say every time.
You might have to pay $3, but you can get it.
Yep.
So I watched an episode or two, episode and a half of the new thing.
Oh, yeah.
The after party. So this is one of those things. It's like one of those murder mystery things where you got a bunch of people.
Yep.
And somebody did something, or maybe they all did it, or maybe no one did it.
Exactly. And you got to figure out who. We call it a locked door mystery.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, what happens to me when I watch shows, after about 20 minutes, I'm like, I've got the patience.
Yeah, Yeah. That's kind of relies on a little bit of patience.
I think what it is, it's like people like the form.
Yes.
They like the genre.
Yeah.
So they're just waiting to see what you do with it.
Exactly. And that's like that's a big part of this one, is that like it's all about genre, because each episode is a different genre of like film.
Right, because Tiffany's character, so like, tell me your mental movie.
Exactly.
Right? What's your movie inside or whatever?
Yeah, what's your mental movie, I think. Yeah.
And yours is sort of like a romance.
A rom-com.
Right. Oh, so everyone has a different mental movie.
Exactly. So the idea is like everybody's got a different perspective, but even that perspective is then put through like how they view.
Well, that's probably
world.
True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
right?
so.
Right? But you know who did it.
Yeah, I know who did it. But I've seen the show.
Yeah. I didn't want to spoil it for anybody. Yeah, that's why they just gave me the screeners yesterday. There's only so much I could do. You seem funny in it, and Tiffany's funny. Tiffany's always pretty fucking good.
She's always so good. She's
right?
a force. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think she's ever going to do my show.
No?
No. Because, like, I didn't really know her as a comic coming up.
Uh-huh.
I remember seeing her at the Comedy Store sometimes. She's like, Mark Maron,
yeah.
I'm going to do your show someday. And I'm like, I don't know you. I think that was my attitude. I'm like, okay. Yeah. And now like she's the biggest star in the world.
Yeah.
And I think she's like, Mark Maron, I'm not going to do your show.
Like the other foot, as they call it.
Exactly. So where do you, how long you lived here?
It'll be 10 years, February 1st.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And where'd you live before that?
Before here, I lived in Chicago.
Oh, really?
For 4 years.
No New York time.
No New York time.
Chicago.
Yeah. Chicago.
And then before that?
Detroit.
And that was where, that was the whole.
That's where I'm from, Detroit.
The whole first part?
Yep. Part one, Detroit. And Ghana. My mom's from Ghana, so I grew up going between.
What does that mean for food-wise?
So Ghanaian food is a lot of stews and soups.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So that's what you grew up with?
I grew up
fish?
With a lot of that. Some fish. Yeah. Like fried fish.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And your mom
grilled fish.
Is a good cook?
My mom's a good cook with Ghanaian food.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
You
with
know,
the Ghanaian
but not,
food?
Not nothing else. Like, talking about like burnt to a crisp steaks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not, burnt to a crisp
doesn't
chicken.
Doesn't have a sense, but fried fish.
Fried fish, like a fried
soups
fish.
Soups and stews.
Soups and stews, perfect. Jollof rice, outstanding.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Jollof rice is like a sort of like a sauce. How do I describe jollof rice?
I don't know.
It's like a spiced, saucy rice.
Uh-huh.
Jollof rice exists in Ghana and Nigeria, and there's like a big rivalry between who has the best one.
Well, that's
like,
better than some sort of horrendous tribal war.
Yes, yeah, I think that's what it kind of boiled down to in the end of it.
The big rice competition,
big rice competition.
Is much better than any of the other options. Yeah,
exactly.
I think it's kind of interesting, and I don't know why I'm asking you about food necessarily, but like
I love it.
I brought up Indian food with Mindy Kaling once. That was one of the worst interviews I ever did.
Yeah.
Well, because there's some part of it, like when you're just being generalizing.
Right.
You know, like it'd be different if I was like, so what do black people eat?
What black people eat? What kind of black eyed peas do you eat? Is it black eyed peas because black? You know, it's, you know right.
So I think with Mindy, I was sort of like, you must like those breads, you know? And it was very specific because she's Indian.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know. We all fuck up.
It's true. But I think I would have some sort of at least a slight expertise when it comes to Ghanaian food.
Well, so yeah, because yeah, but did you spend time there?
I did. I spent. I used to go back and forth
because you have grandparents.
Because yeah, I had, yeah. In fact, I lived there. Well, my grandmother on my mom's side,
yeah,
died 2 years before I was born.
Uh-huh.
My grandfather died when I was about six, and so I lived there when I was like six and seven because like he was a chief. He was a Ghanaian chief. So we had a big funeral, like, event, like a huge...
A chief, like
yeah.
A tribal chief?
Uh-huh.
So you come from a long line?
That
kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, your family were chiefs?
My family was chief. Like, matrilineal, it's matrilineal.
Yeah.
So my uncle would be the chief now, and then it could be me or my cousins, most likely my cousins.
Going to step up?
I don't speak the language. I truly don't.
Well, there's your next movie.
I know.
Have you pitched it?
I've been working on it.
You have, haven't you?
I mean, every day I'm like, what should I do? And I'm like, I'll figure it out. And then as I get older, it's like less.
It'd be like the reverse of Coming to America.
Exactly. Exactly. Going to Africa.
Yeah.
You know?
How could you debate? Hey, that could be funny.
I think so.
Right?
I think so.
But you theoretically could be chief. But your cousin lives there?
My cousins, I'm also the youngest of like my cousins.
So you have to kill them.
Exactly. And it's like a lot of responsibility. And I'm like, oh, I'd rather do my stuff.
Oh, my God. But what is it like? What is it like there? I mean, I can't, like, I don't know anything about anything. Is there big cities?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Accra. So I'm from Ghana.
Yeah.
And Accra, Ghana is like a very industrialized West African city. So like the whole thing, freeways. And
yeah.
Now, I went there a few years ago with Conan O'Brien because he did Conan Abroad. And so I hadn't been in like maybe about 14 years before that.
His reason to go?
Yeah, because they were doing a comeback to Ghana kind of thing, and then they invited him.
Oh,
and then him knowing me and him knowing that I'm from Ghana, he brought me with him.
Right.
So like I went and I was kind of like his like guide for some of these things.
But you don't speak the language.
I don't speak the language.
You didn't help.
I sure didn't. Yeah. I really didn't right off the bat because like I've always like had the ear for it, so I can understand it.
Yeah.
But I can't speak it.
Yeah.
You know, un fatui.
Yeah.
But
what's the base of the language? Is there, you don't know.
Tribal African.
Oh,
know?
Really? It's not like there's no other, there's no French to it or anything like that?
No, it was an English colony.
Oh, was it?
So everybody speaks English.
Right.
English is a national language.
Right.
And there's so many tribal languages in Ghana because, you know, Ghana isn't like a made form from Africa. It was like the Europeans came and said, all right, well, this is Ghana.
It sectioned it.
And so like whatever tribes within it, like guess what? You're all Ghanaians.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Oh, well, no, we're Fanti and we're and we're, you know what I mean? So all of a sudden they're all part of this.
Are there difficulties amongst them? I don't know. You're not a historian.
I'm not.
You're not from the Ghana tourist industry.
No.
Is it safe there?
Very safe there. let me look at my talking points here.
I have a book for you. It's a pamphlet.
Visit Ghana.
But does your mom go back there all the time?
She's there maybe half the year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So she's there all the time.
Your parents aren't together?
They are, but they're just like always just doing
that's
their
the way
own
they
thing.
Do
that's,
it?
That's how it's always
your,
been.
Your dad's a Detroit guy?
My dad's a Detroit guy.
All the way back?
All the way
been
back.
Been there for a while?
Born in Detroit, March 8th, 1945.
What do they do?
So my dad was a restaurateur.
Really?
Yeah, he was at Michigan State for hotel and restaurant management, and then like sort of got into restaurants and hotels and like sort of the service industry. And then but then he started doing tours, so that he would do tours to he had a company called Lifestyle Tours.
Yeah,
he would take people from the States and travel all over Ghana with them or all over Africa.
So it's Ghana based.
So it's kind of Ghana based.
So your mom and dad are in on it.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. That's why she's down there 6 months waiting wait for him to bring some suckers down.
But
there.
They haven't done it in so long. I think they retired from that like maybe
was it
20
did it
years
work?
Ago. It worked, you know, that sort of thing kind of gets.
It's a hell of a trip, right?
It's a hell of a trip, and it's really a beautiful trip.
So your dad had restaurants too?
Yeah, yeah. They had a Ghanaian restaurant in Detroit called Jinya Mi House.
Was it popular?
Yeah, not incredibly. Restaurants are hard business to do, but people who knew it loved it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But
But it wasn't gangbusters.
No franchises. No franchises, you know, as of yet.
So you grew up in the restaurant business, kind of?
You know, yeah, adjacent.
Go to your dad's restaurant?
Yeah, I go to my dad's. We had an apartment upstairs from it. So,
oh, wow.
You know,
so you're just right downstairs.
Exactly.
You go eat breakfast in the kitchen at the restaurant.
You know, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Your mom cooked at the restaurant?
She cooked in the restaurant. She, like, taught everybody how to make the things. It was all Ghanaian food,
right.
You know?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's nice.
It is. I enjoyed those times. I mean, I was very young.
Right.
The three things in my life were like, that restaurant.
Yeah.
I got a Nintendo. Yeah. So like, it was all about Super Mario Brothers. And then like, you know, Simpsons or like TV. That was it.
The restaurant, Nintendo, and Simpsons.
Yeah.
That was your life. Do you have brothers or sisters?
I have half brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
So my dad had children before me. So I'm separated by at least 14 years.
What?
You know, yeah.
Was he old guy?
My dad is now 70.
He's not that old.
77.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But you've got these brothers and half brothers and sisters that are 15 years older than you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know them?
I do. We're not super, super, super close.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're my siblings. I love them very much. I'm closest with my oldest brother, who is about 21 years older than me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's he do?
He's got his doctorate in vermotoxicology. He has, like, a master's degree. So he works for health in... like public health in Seattle. Verminal toxicology.
Verminal toxicology. Uh-huh. So shit, you poison you get from bugs.
From bugs and like
rats.
And rats and that sort of thing. But so he works for, that's what his doctorate was in.
Holy shit, what a weird focus.
And like he was like right there smack dab in, because like ground zero kind of where like the biggest spread happened of COVID
yeah.
was there.
Right,
so he
Seattle.
Was like sitting there watching it and
right.
knowing what was coming and what was going on.
Really?
You know?
So he knows a little bit about the epidemic mathematics?
He truly does.
Shit, was he calling you? Did he say like, dude?
He'd be like, heads up, get this, get that, do this. This is coming, and this is coming, and this is coming. And everybody's like, whatever. He's like, trust me.
Really?
You know?
But
yeah.
Generally he deals with rats? And
I think he did that a while ago. Now I think it's kind of, he was a professional student for the longest time,
oh, right,
you know?
Right.
So he's got his like MBA and
vermal.
He's got his...
That word even.
I know, right?
I didn't even know that word.
I didn't either. And like, verminal.
Verminal.
Mm-hmm.
Verminal toxicology.
Yeah.
Wow, those books.
I know. Woof, you know?
Yeah. Plague.
Plague, exactly.
So, but no full brother and sister.
No full brother and sister.
So you're like the special kid.
Exactly. Exactly. They call my mom one baby mother.
Oh, so, that doesn't sound like a good thing.
It's because she doted on me a lot. You know what I mean? So
right.
you're the African mothers like that, like a bunch of things that they were like doing all this stuff. But like my mom was like, oh, this is Sam. We've got a
Sam.
So like, oh, one baby mother. He's going to be fine. But I'm like, hey.
He seemed well adjusted.
I think so.
So what drew you to, because I didn't know who you were until I saw Veep. And then like, who's that guy? And now it's more like, there's that guy again.
Yeah. If you look at every movie, I'm in there in somewhere.
Right, yeah. Just... It's like, there's Sam. That guy's doing everything. He was there for like a minute. Am I right?
Yeah.
But where'd you start doing this?
So I started in high school, like, you know, high school theater, but then there was a second city in Detroit.
What happened? Did you see Detroit fall apart? I mean, are you in the suburbs or?
No, I lived in the city proper, you know, but like Detroit's sort of decline happened like in the 60s, you know?
Yeah, but like, dude, I mean, I was there, it collapsed.
Like a second collapse, yeah.
Like for real. Like I remember going there, I went there a couple years ago, and it was like, they're like, it's coming back. I'm like, is it though?
Well, it truly is. But like, somebody said, and I think it's true, like Detroit is usually like a pretty good, barometer for like what's going to happen to the rest of the country in like maybe about 5 years.
Ooh, that's not great.
You know?
Yeah.
So like Detroit saw like a real economic downturn, and then pretty 5 years, we all saw one.
Yeah.
But like now, because of like Detroit's, there's so much space there.
Yeah.
And so much land, and like the prices of everything had just dipped so low.
Did you buy a house for a nickel?
I didn't buy a house for a nickel, but I bought my parents, I have my parents' condo, and then like I'm always trying to like see what the right thing is. But like now the prices are going back up. But like when they were at their lowest, I didn't have like the money to like buy.
Like
it
just seemed like it was one of those things where like, should I buy 9 houses,
you know,
in Detroit?
Yeah.
Just to have, but then you got property tax and you know, you got to make sure you got to get the verminologist in.
Exactly. Exactly. Let them know like, how many rats are the rats.
What are we
helpful?
Doing? But like I worked there though, but it seemed like there's things happening in downtown, but none of them seem almost experimental.
Well, yes. And I feel like it was a place where you could try a business or try whatever and like fail, but like the risks weren't too high.
Sure.
But I think some of those things did stick. And with Quicken Loans going, like making like, essentially headquarters downtown Detroit.
Well, that guy owns the whole fucking city,
owns
right?
Owns the city. Exactly.
What's
essentially.
His name? Steve somebody?
Dave.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, it happens to me all the time. I couldn't remember Lindsay Lohan today.
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget her name. oh, my God.
The Quickens guy.
The Quickens guy.
But he owns like the whole city.
Yeah, and he owns the Cleveland Cavaliers.
So what's he going to do with the whole city?
Very good question. You know, we got to see.
I did a show at the Masonic Hall.
Masonic Temple? Yeah.
That place is nuts.
It's nuts. I graduated in there. I guess we had our graduation, our high school graduation.
The haunted shithole, that thing.
It's pretty incredible. There's like so many like hidden
There's two
things.
Theaters there.
Two full theaters there.
Like I played in the one little, the smaller one, but it's not by much.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more cavernous. There's like an almost like a circular-ish theater, which is probably where you graduated.
I think so. That's
and then
the
there's
one.
like a standard structure theater.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't mean to call it a shithole. It definitely felt like a haunted place.
There's definitely like spirits and stuff running around there. There's like.
In hats,
and they've got like costumes and stuff. Yeah. We for our first season, I did a show called Detroiters in Detroit
with that Tim Robinson.
With Tim Robinson,
yeah.
And the first season, our production office was in the Masonic Temple as well.
Really?
And we shot in there. So there's an episode called "Happy Birthday, Mr. Duvet." And that we filmed all that in the Masonic Temple also.
Really?
So like we were just like spent so much time in there, and there's like so many like doors that then lead to like a hallway that's like hidden.
It's crazy.
And like stuff.
It's huge.
It's huge.
And I don't like, and I just remember being down there and that whole area, it just seems kind of desolate in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just these random buildings that are like, oh, that's a new restaurant. You're like, right there?
Yeah.
And then we went to some food hall nearby.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it was sort of like, it's kind of a food hall. You know, I just remember I had a pad thai burrito, which was a little much.
I think if I know where that is.
Well, everything seems like a pop-up business.
Well, right, because I think everybody's just going to give it their best shot. And like there's a lot of ingenuity, and like a lot of people in Detroit are like, all right, well, I think I can make this work.
Sure.
You know, and they try. And like, of course, it's hard when you don't have like a lot of foot traffic to like have like a walk-up
business.
You
got to draw people back to a place that they may think is dangerous.
You know, yeah. So like so what I hope helps and isn't just like another sort of displacement thing of like these stadiums go in there and then like, you know, the idea is like they bring people there, but the idea is like, how do you bring people there and not have them leave again? And also like, who then comes there? Is there not a room for the people who, you know, like can the people who live in that city not have a city for themselves? Are you waiting for somebody to come from outside of it?
It's hard to know. Like, Cleveland's sort of like that, but Cleveland kind of built a little area down by the stadium. That Third Street or whatever where you know, the restaurants and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on since COVID, though.
I mean,
so they had... So I had Second City in Detroit.
So Second City in Detroit. I started taking classes there when I was in high school. So I was like 15 when I started taking classes.
Who was like anybody we know in those classes?
Not in those classes.
But what was it like? They actually had a theater there too?
Oh yeah, there's a full theater.
No kidding.
Did shows.
I guess they're close to
that's where
Chicago.
Keegan-Michael Key came out of that theater.
Out of Detroit.
Second City.
So there's that guy.
Yep. Larry Joe Campbell came out of that theater. Yeah. Mark Evan Jackson.
Yeah.
Naima Funk. Josh Funk.
I don't know that guy.
They were all like Detroit, Second City folks.
So they all in show business now?
They're all in show business now. Yep.
No kidding.
Yep.
So you did that in high school.
So I started there in high school and then kind of like worked my way up. And then, so I started taking classes there in high school and then worked my way up to like understudying.
But you did like regular theater in high school.
I
and
did.
Then, and then and you're then, like, you're going to be the funny guy?
Yeah, then I like kind of found that there. I mean, I always like have been like I just always loved comedy and like comedy movies.
You've never done serious? I feel like you could do serious.
I think so.
You haven't done it though?
I haven't done it. I'm always like not worried, but I always want to make sure I don't make that transition just out of ego. You know what I mean? Where sometimes like, take me seriously.
Yeah, or you try it once and they're like, wow, he's much better at this than we thought.
You know what I mean? Exactly.
You know, no more funny for you.
Exactly. Yeah, how about you just be the guy crying in the corner?
Yeah. So who were the teachers, though? Like, they come from Chicago?
No, they were Detroit people. Oh, yeah. In fact, when I was in classes when I was 15, kind of left and came back, and then I was in classes when I was maybe 17, and Tim Robinson was my level A teacher at Second City.
I don't know. That guy's kind of new to me.
Yeah, he's
like, a lot of people know him.
Yeah.
But like, I watched his show, I guess like the last year for the first time. And I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? My producer loves him.
Yeah.
And there's some sort of backstory on him. But like, I don't know what it is. Like, I guess he was almost on SNL.
He was on SNL for a season. And then he wrote on SNL for like four seasons after that.
Oh, so he was there a long time.
Yeah, he was there for a bit and then moved out here.
Because he couldn't get screen time, or
I think it just was a weird fit. You know what I mean? Because
he's a weird fit.
You know,
in
he's
reality,
he's just a unique guy. You know, he's very specific.
So where'd you meet him? He was your teacher.
So we met at Second City. He was like my level A teacher.
What does that mean, level A?
It's like the first class of Second City, but then the adult. Like, I did a high school class, and then I did the adult classes.
So he was living in Detroit, teaching at Second City.
Mm-hmm.
Tim
and
Robinson.
He's from Detroit. You know, so we're all from Detroit.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So. Because he has a certain sensibility. What are you learning from that guy?
So you're learning improv and like sort of like the sort of rules of improv and then like how to perform.
But is he a normal person?
Oh, yeah. He's the most normal person. Huh. You know, but just like a very strong comic sensibility and like very specific.
Oh, so that's a bit.
I mean,
he's not really a nut job.
No, he's not a nut job. No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, we're all nut jobs.
I guess.
You know.
But like, there's a world where there's people that do sketch,
mm-hmm.
and then there's people that do like some other thing that's like one step beyond it into mm-hmm. kind of creating an entire time zone for themselves.
Right?
Like Tim and Eric. Eric Andre.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim seems to be one of those guys.
Well, yeah, because I think we get bored of like the form of just sketch. Like, you know, here's a setup, here's the payoff, and like, you know.
Or here's a setup, and then we lose control of it by the end.
Right, exactly. Whereas like...
It doesn't land
because like we're like... Because like by now, we all know how sketch works. So
kind of.
An audience, you're watching, you're like, here's my friend, he's a little crazy, and he comes in, he's got like a hat on, it's like, oh, the hat is going to be the joke.
Sometimes I don't understand it because like I think I'm expecting closure, and,
right.
and so much of sketch, you know, certainly modern sketch relies on a premise.
Yes.
And a repetition of things.
And repetition of premise, which also I feel comes from improv. You know, because like with improv, you can do you need your premise. That's all, because you don't know where the end is.
Right. And then like people get louder.
You know, exactly. You get louder and more physical, and then somebody sweeps, and then you're in the next thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So like with sketch, I feel it needs to not just be a direct overlay of that.
Yeah.
You know, you have to like keep on breaking the, and that's what Tim does, I think, and I think you should leave. Is like, you know, you think you're going one way and then you turn left and now you're in a completely different thing that's like based on that small thing, and then now you're here, and so you've made five left turns before you realize it, and then the closure happens at the end, or it doesn't happen, but you've gone on this journey and you're onto the next thing.
Right. Yeah. And also there's just this element of like my friend or my producer Brendan thinks that there, you know, in an analysis of it,
uh-huh.
is that he was sort of this perfect kind of comedic antidote to Trumpism, because mm-hmm. you know, the comedy is a guy that forces everyone around him
to accept his reality. Yes, exactly. And the premise of most of these sketches is a person makes a mistake, refuses to admit it, and then doubles down on that refusal.
Right.
So, you know.
That's the structure.
That's the structure. It's yeah. a very fragile person makes a mistake, a public mistake. Instead of apologizing or admitting it, he then tries to act
so
like
that,
it didn't happen.
That, everyone knows that in the writer's room.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's the funniest thing is a person who just can't admit they're wrong.
Sure.
You know? So I think that's that.
He came up
kernel.
With that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's his character?
That's his character. That's what he, I think that's what he does, like, the best, you know, is these like these fragile egoed people,
lying guys,
these lying guys. You know,
but when you met him, he was just a teacher.
Yeah, yeah. And then we did a bunch of shows at Second City and at this theater called the Planet Ant Theater
in Detroit.
Yeah,
wait, you and him did.
Uh huh. Yeah,
wait, just the two of you.
Two of us, and then sometimes we would do shows with our friend like Sarin Choksi. And Brett Gunnell and all these people, like, so out of like our Detroit folks,
yeah,
Tim and I are like the ones who've like come out here and like kind of like made it the most.
But you went to Chicago first?
But went to Chicago first, and we both ended up in Chicago at the same time, but like different paths.
Yeah.
But it's all both Second City. I worked on a cruise ship for Second City.
Oh, you were a cruise guy?
I did a cruise for like, I did two contracts, both 5 months long. And then during
holy
that first
shit,
contract,
man, this world of show business that I don't get, man.
Crazy.
Like I mean, I know, like, you know, there's entertainment on cruises, but then there are those people that do the bus. They get on the bus and they do all the national touring.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, Sudeikis did that.
So
right?
and then both of us did the touring company as well. So
who,
I did the cruise
Robinson?
Ship. Yep. And we did two. There's three touring companies in Second City in Chicago.
Who's making all that money?
Second City. And
wow.
they're giving you some money, but they are...
They're giving you opportunity.
They're giving you opportunity
to grow
learn
as a
how
performer.
To be a performer. And then you get to go all these places.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, you know, hey. It's
but you did, I guess, right?
I truly did.
So
I learned
you're
so
on the
much.
Boat with Tim Robinson?
No. I did a boat. I did two different contracts on a boat. And Tim then went to Chicago to join
well,
the
what is that?
Company.
So wait, the boat, like it's an improv crew?
You're doing like best of sketch. So best of Second City Archive for one show, which is like...
Wait, from way back?
From as far back as like...
You just kind of go into the library, you know,
it's a director who then like kind of like takes all the stuff, goes to the archives and like makes a show based on whoever's cast is.
No shit. So you could be doing stuff that like Brian Doyle Murray did?
I mean, truly. Yeah. I would do like Chris Farley stuff.
Really?
I would do like, yeah, like just deep in the...
But those were not... So that all that stuff was scripted. A lot of that stuff is on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a Second City show is like a scripted, like 90-minute show with like scripted sketches, and then like most times windows of improv.
Okay.
And so then all those sketches, you know, the show will have a name because it's got like a director and like a sometimes like a through line narrative or whatever. And then all those scenes then go into the archive.
Yeah.
Because, and if you're like a aficionado, you'd like know, oh, that scene is from, you know,
a
Doors
nerd.
Open on the Left. Or,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Truly.
Second City nerd.
Second City nerd. And, you know, like so many
so
people.
So that's how it works. So they have ownership of all that
so
stuff.
They own it all.
And then they just send you guys out.
And then you're just doing that stuff.
How many people in the crew?
So there were five of us and then a music director. Is a person who plays play piano like to accompany us,
and this still goes on.
I think so. I don't know if the
with COVID,
cruise ship
I don't
is that
know, right.
Yeah, I have no idea.
But that's the racket, huh?
It really is.
Just
but
get all these youngsters on the road
and just catch them. And they were like, "What else are you gonna do?" And for me, I was like making the most money I'd ever made. I was like making at that time, I think it was like $900 a week.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Whoa!"
Yeah,
you know, living on. I had no expenses. So for the first contract, I was like living like I was on vacation. Because I'm like, Barbados. I'm going to
But then you see the people that saw you.
Yeah, exactly. So every week it would be a different a reset. So Sunday, the people would get on the ship, you know, kind of like meander their way through, make their way. Monday, everybody was like kind of seasick. So as a crew, we would kind of like just go and like enjoy the ship.
Right.
Tuesday, people would kind of like get their sea legs, start doing that. And then Wednesday had our show.
Right.
And at that point, everybody on the ship knew you.
Yeah.
So then from Wednesday, you drink in the crew bar downstairs.
Right.
And that's like dollar beers and all that. But then also you'd get like, everybody's buying you drinks. They're like, oh, you're the one that did that thing.
Yeah,
yay.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
so, you know, you can do that for a certain amount of time. Then you like, are overwhelmed. And then it all starts over again Sunday. So it's a new...
Oh, so it's a week-long
thing. It's a week-long thing.
So you didn't have to do two or three shows.
Yeah, exactly. So you would do the
written show.
You have a bad
show, and you're kind of like, hey.
You're like, yeah. And you're like, oh, okay. Where's your friend?
Yeah.
So you do the written show, and then the end of the week, you do the improv show, where you're just like improvising games and
stuff. Oh, so that's the way it works.
Yeah.
And then you did the bus thing, too.
Yep.
And then did you end up teaching?
I taught in Detroit, and then I taught... I didn't teach in Chicago because I was like on. I was on the touring company as on the main stage.
So you and Tim do the shows in Detroit.
Yeah.
So then like when you're in Chicago, he's doing, what's he doing?
So he came to Chicago. He went to Chicago to do the touring company. So he went there for a touring company. I was on the ships, and then they hired me from the ships to do a touring company as well.
Not
so then we're
him,
on
though.
Different touring companies.
Yeah. So he's out in the bus.
You know. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The bus. You would fly. You'd fly places.
Yeah. Wow. So how did? When did you? Would you guys remain friends, right?
Best friend. Like Tim is my best friend, truly. Oh, like little kids, we're best friends.
Right. So why, when does he get SNL?
He got SNL when he left the Chicago main stage, and I left the Chicago main stage maybe like 6 months later. I moved to LA, and then he... so he was still in Chicago, and he auditioned, and then he got SNL, and so he got that. I guess that would have been like 2012.
You didn't do SNL?
I didn't do SNL. I auditioned. I did like two screen tests, but I
so you got that far?
Uh huh.
You had the Lauren meeting?
No meeting directly with Lauren. Just you know, but so I never did the show. But Lauren produced Detroiters.
He did.
Yeah.
Oh, because Tim was part of the Broadway video team.
Exactly.
You auditioned but didn't get it around when he was on, when Tim was on?
No, it was before. So I'd gone to screen test while I was on the main stage of Chicago.
So that's why you didn't. That's why you went to L.A.
Yeah, because I could stay at Second City and then keep on like trying to like be there to audition for SNL because they would come to see the shows every year. And I was like, well, the only reason I would do another show would be to have SNL see me and try and do that. And I was like, I don't want this to be that because I really enjoyed my time at Second City.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me just leave. And also, I had been doing sort of like sending tapes to LA for like pilot season and stuff. And
I had an agent out here?
I had an agent because I got my agents and stuff from when I first went to do my SNL thing, because like once your name goes out, I was like, these are people auditioning, then everybody comes out like
so you're
the
doing the
bushes
tape.
And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so I'm doing tapes and I'm like getting close, but they're always like, oh, we hired somebody who lives on the street. So I was like, all right, time to move.
When did you do Detroiters though? Were you out here already?
I was out here already. Yeah. Tim was living in New York, writing at SNL. I was out here and like doing show. That's when I was on in fact I wasn't even a cast member of Veep yet. I was guesting on Veep, and I was like I was doing stuff here and there.
Right,
and I went, we shot the pilot of that. That would have been
Detroiters.
Yeah,
2000.
It would have been 2014, I think.
Yeah,
it would have been maybe 2015.
Wow.
So we came together to like you know write that with Joe Kelly and Zach Cannon, and so then we made that pilot, and then like a year later it got picked up to series.
You did 20.
Well, I did 22 seasons. Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah, I had a great time. We wanted to do more, but you know, such is life.
But yeah, and so you got cast on Veep how? Just by doing a recurring, and then
So I was on Veep. I was supposed to just do one episode.
Yeah,
and then I think the character worked so well, and we had so much fun. They like wrote me into the very next episode, and then they kept on like kind of like. Like having me hang out in Baltimore because we shot in Baltimore, and they're like, maybe we're gonna put you in this episode, and I was like, I'm unemployed. I'll come and hang out and stay at the Four Seasons as long as you want me to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then like by the end, they were like, and then Richard comes up and he's like, hey, I'm here. I was like, oh, something's up. And then they asked me to join the cast the next season.
That was great, right?
Yeah, that was terrific.
She's so funny.
She's so funny, and like she's like truly like one of the most down to earth people.
Yeah,
which like it's like shocking how chill and like nice of a person.
She's very in control of her comedic craft.
Yes, sharp precision.
Right?
You know, yes.
And
yes.
She's so like, you know, all those choices, and she's just so fucking good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you learn stuff from her?
So much. Like just like some of that precision and like those precise choices.
Yeah.
Like watching how she does like takes and how she like plan, like you know, how she like analyzes in a rehearsal of the script, and like sort of like the rhythm of things. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, okay, interesting.
Right, like you mean physical stuff?
Like physical stuff, and like even like pattern timing, and like kind of how to like zhuzh, and like talking over each other. Like there's so many things that I feel like even just watching it, you wouldn't realize how it's made unless you were doing it and like watching somebody.
Well, yeah,
but
I mean, there's got to be this, you know, especially with her and what's his name?
Tony Hale.
Tony Hale, mm-hmm. is that the that dynamic? There's such a rhythm to it.
Yep.
You've got to figure it out.
Exactly.
It doesn't
exactly.
just happen.
No, so like not to be pretentious about it, but it's like very like Commedia, where like you have like these roles, and they know how the relationship is, and they know like what this person would say, and like there's sort of lots of these, like, so you know how Gary knows what the thing is that she wants and what she says she wants, and like what to give her, and then like she's gonna like fight that first thing but really want that second thing, you know what I mean? Like it's so interesting to see like the math of it, and then but then it's made loose, you know. So like there's a heavy structure, but then there's like
and everybody but they've got to work that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Like no one's going to direct them to
because they just know it. Like the script is there. And
everybody was kind of paired up. Who were you kind of?
I became paired up with Tim Simon.
Right.
Yeah.
And like that sort of like it was sort of the charm of the thing. There was like several different comedy teams working it all the time.
Yeah. And another great thing about like my character was like I got to like kind of like have dynamics with different, like, so I had my character, I had my dynamic with Tim, which was like my main one. But then I would also be with Reed and Tim, Reed and Amy,
right?
You know,
That level of employee,
yeah, exactly,
yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it was funny. I know, and I worked with Bachtel. Dan.
Oh, Dan Bacadol.
Bacadol.
Yeah.
His last name's always sort of
He's a Second City guy.
I know. Mm-hmm. But he's like from the, he's like the angry version.
Yes.
Like it seems like Second City, you got the goofy guys and you got the yellers.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I'm talking about that's the recipe. They've got a certain amount of slots for each of them.
Goofy guy, yelling guy. And if you know, fat can go either way.
Fat can go either way, exactly. And sometimes you get all three.
Yeah,
you know, Chris Farley, the fat yelling goofy guy.
That's right.
You know,
and the real yelling guys go to Steppenwolf.
Exactly.
That's Chicago. That's how Chicago works.
Yep. That's a nutshell.
So what starts to happen like after V? Did you get Emmys?
The show got Emmys.
Yeah. You didn't get one personally?
I didn't get one personally.
But then after Veep, you start like just showing up in all these movies?
Yeah, just kind of popping up in these things. Detroiters didn't go past Veep, and then I did a show called Champagne Ill.
Yeah.
And then showing up in movies and keep on trying to do that.
What was Champagne Ill?
Champagne Ill was a show I did with Adam Pally.
I know that guy.
YouTube. Yeah, he's a funny dude. I love him.
He is funny, yeah.
It was a show for YouTube TV.
Did you know him before?
I like knew him like kind of like remotely, you know, just like I see him at a party and be like
who are your generation of guys? Like Sudeikis? He's a little older.
Sudeikis is older. So Sudeikis produced Detroiters. So he was on SNL when we were on Second City.
Yeah.
And so he would come to Second City and like we became friends that way. He was like, oh, you guys are good. You
did Ted Lasso as well.
I did Ted Lasso, yeah. Because it was written by Ted Lasso. So Jason, Joe Kelly, and Brendan Hunt, those are all my pals. Joe Kelly, co-creator of Detroiters.
Yeah.
So he's also co-creator of Ted Lasso.
Oh.
And so like the character that I played, you know, is Ghanaian billionaire because they were like, oh, we got to find something for Sam to do.
Yeah.
So it's that. The character, I mean, like one of my things that's so sweet to me, I'm happy, is like the character Sam Obasanya is like named after me.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, that's sweet. So then to get to interact with that character.
Yeah.
And to get in there was like really a fun thing.
It's nice when your friends take care of you.
It really is. It's
they
like,
find something for you to do.
You know?
We'll make something for this guy to do.
You know?
But let's talk about you and Tim again. Because,
like,
I want to understand where this fucking comedy comes from. Because, I'm just a stand-up guy. I don't understand the evolution of sketch, even though we talked about it to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem like, you know, Like whatever SNL is doing is what SNL is doing.
Yes. And I think it's SNL's its own kind right. of sketch.
But it's old school already.
Yes. Yes.
But then like, you know, whatever Tim and Eric were doing, like who the fuck knows what that is.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens on a lot of levels. It's, you know, it's cinematic, it's, you know, it's comedic, it's, you know, there's some they create a
whole universe.
Yeah, of different textures, mm-hmm. you know. But mm-hmm. like it just seems like that Tim and you do something that does create that different time zone. Like there's that, the one sketch where you're a host, or like singing.
Like Baby of the Year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what is that? How does that stuff, how do you decide on that shit?
That one, I like, that was an SNL sketch that Tim was working on that like just kind of didn't work. So then when he was doing the show, he was like, I know Sam knows how to do this sort of energy, and like this again a character who has like these sort of like wait this host of this show, but like the premise is already like a weird thing where it's like a picking who the best baby is.
Yeah,
so then you put this level of like who's this host of this show, you can just let the baby thing be the sketch itself, like, oh, these babies, and then they look at the babies, but it's like, yeah. No, the babies are like a side thing. It's what's happening, but like really,
it's this weird,
weird guy. But then also the fact that there's like this history that's happened in the sketch, the sketch has been going that in this world, this thing has been going on for a long time. The judges are all confused upset and riled up,
yeah.
And like he's trying to, and like the audience hates one baby, and it's like all these levels, yeah. You know, just makes it a cacophony. And so like it's like my job in that sketch to sort of. I don't even say like to manage, because like no, he's like a wild guy who's like not really managing. He's doing his own thing.
Yeah. So it just seems like what it really is about commitment.
Yeah. For that character, it's all about commitment.
But all of it, you know, like you know, you at some point the sort of element of discovery must be kind of fun,
mm-hmm.
because you know you guys got to know it's funny,
because
it's not. Necessarily going to be funny on the page, as they say.
Right, exactly.
You're not writing these jokes or whatever.
We'll never write jokes. That's the thing, though. There won't be jokes.
Yeah.
Because
so it's complete commitment.
And like the person believing the thing.
The situation. You
know? Exactly. So it's never a wink, never a nod. It's always just the person is like doing that thing and they believe it entirely.
Yeah. And so you can kind of do anything ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you just sort of like whatever you decide is going to be, whether it's going to be, you know, a guy who, you know, only sells remote controls.
Right.
For like even just something that simple.
Right.
If you or Tim were to be like, Just go all in.
Because yeah. the guy's like selling remote controls is because he sold everything he's got to like sell these remote controls. Like and he really believes it. And like people are like, remote controls are done. He's like, no, trust me. What, you want to use your phone? That doesn't make sense. So the person's like dives in. He believes it. He's I'm desperate.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, right. Well, was you have a better remote at home? I guarantee you, this remote is not going to do what this remote can do. Please. Let me come into your house and look at your remotes.
So the desperation is
desperate.
It's essential.
It's essential. Exactly. Exactly.
So do you write on that show as well?
No.
He just has you on sometimes.
Just has me on, and like I'll he'll send me some scripts and be like, that's funny. Maybe do this.
Oh, you know.
But I'm not like.
And he's out here too.
He's out here. Yeah.
What's he working on?
He's getting ready to pitch a couple shows.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Is he gonna do more of that other thing?
I think so. I'm not sure.
You're not representing.
I'm not a representative. I'm not a.
So what do you got going on?
I've got this show called After Party that's coming to.
Yeah, we talked about it briefly.
Briefly, yeah.
But there's a big cast in there. You had a lot of young comic heroes in there.
Yeah, Ben Schwartz.
Alana, right?
Alana Glazer.
Ben Schwartz is got a lot of physical business going on.
He does. That's a good way to put it.
I know him. I've interviewed him. He's a nice guy. But I'm watching him. I watch him in everything. He's like, a lot of things happen. Like hands are moving. Heads moving.
But how about that? It's like a lot of things are moving, but it's all like precise.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
It's like it's pretty fascinating because, like, you know, we spent a lot of time together on this show because, well, first off, we shot that show in the height of COVID. So we were shooting that show.
So everybody's getting off like cut, mask.
Exactly. And then we're just like all here, zone A, zone B. Yeah, you guys are like all together. You get your masks on.
Wow.
But, you know, I spent so much time
with
him.
Big ensemble for COVID shooting.
Truly.
Wow.
Truly. We shot that show from like October to February. So that's like the height of everything. And so, you know, like also these would be the only people I'd see. I'd go home and I'd be at work. There's like no going anywhere else in between.
Yeah, because you didn't want to catch it and bring it.
And then shut the show down.
Yeah.
You know?
So you did a lot of work with him. You know, like, because you guys are buddies.
Yeah. You know, and I didn't know him super well before.
No.
But so like doing the show, I was like, oh, okay. Let me like working with someone like this, you really get to like analyze and like sort of like absorb that person.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay. So like all these like you say like a lot of movements. Yeah. I'm like, oh, but all these things are like very specific.
Yeah.
You know, and
he's
so quick. Also.
Yeah.
His brain will like come up with like four things in an instant. And I'm like, that's really impressive and really good.
But he's like a full-on improviser guy, isn't
he? Yes, yep.
He's not a Chicago
improviser. He's
in New York, UCB.
UCB, yeah.
Oh, he's one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys, like, it seems like there should be some competitions between the
New York and the
cities.
Chicago?
Yeah, sure.
I think
UCB is born of Chicago, though.
Yeah, exactly.
I knew those original UCBers.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when they showed up with their big idea.
Yeah.
The four of them and their big ideas. And then they built their little, had their little theaters. And now they run the model still. I don't know where any of that is going since COVID, but sort of franchising. And I don't know, does UCB have the roadshow business too?
I think they do. It's not the same as like Second City. It's like Second City is like, if you're on a touring company, you're touring 52 weeks out of the year. You know, you're that's your job, you know, and like maybe you
gotta
get out on the side.
Did you have to have a moment where you're like, I gotta get out?
Yeah, I was like, I'm moving to LA, and they're like, you want to join the main stage? I was like, okay.
In LA,
yeah.
She did it here.
So no, but I said I'm moving to LA, and they asked me to join Chicago main stage.
Oh, so they try to keep you in the family.
Exactly.
Really?
Exactly. And then 2 years later, I was like, all right, I'm moving to LA. And they're like, nothing we can do.
Yeah, but, we gave them the best we had.
That was it. Because in fact, I was like, I was going to leave for that cruise ship, and I was like, all right, I'm moving to LA. And they're like, come join the touring company. I was okay.
So the after party, like whose show is that? How'd that come about?
So it's Chris Miller wrote and directed it, and so it's Lord and Miller who produced.
So what did they do?
The show. They did like Lego Movie. And Clone High and the 21 Jump Street movies.
Right.
Really brilliant dudes, and I really love those guys.
It all seems very tight, and the characters are like very specific. It's almost like we were talking about before. There's almost a Commedia dell'arte thing. Like everybody's occupying a fairly familiar space.
Yes.
Right.
You know, because everybody has their like sort of tropes and their genre, because that trope then fits into their genre
of the movie that the memories.
Exactly.
That's the whole hook of the thing. That if I had watched more of them, I would have
known. You would have known it.
But now I come in here pretending that I'm hip after watching one. But when you told me that was the angle, I'm like, oh, okay,
yeah.
I can see it.
Yep.
I didn't put it together.
Fair. How could you have?
It's not my job to watch the whole fucking series, is it?
No, I know. It should be your pleasure.
I'm going to get back to it.
All right.
I had to jump through a lot of hoops to get to Apple Screeners. No, it looks like a fun show, and I think that those things are, like, especially with the success of, like, Knives Out, was, you know, it's a popular thing.
Yeah.
And this is, like, geared to younger folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's familiar archetypes.
Yes.
And this all revolves around a high school reunion.
Exactly.
Then there's the guy that nobody knows that is set up to make you think he did it from the beginning.
Maybe.
All right, whatever. Maybe. Tiffany Haddish plays the detective.
Who's come to
she interviews everybody?
Mm-hmm.
But everyone factors into everybody's memory, right?
So everybody's just recalling the story, like Rashomon.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's like telling the story through their own perspective because everybody's there and everybody's involved. You know, so it's like who. Wow. And of course, everybody to themselves is innocent, but everybody else is a suspect to each person. You know, so it's like you're watching. You're like, oh, how do you piece this story together?
Well, all right, but here's the thing. Fucking sorry about my language. No, here's the thing that upsets me.
Yeah.
About these things these days.
Mm-hmm.
That any kind of mystery thriller, even if it's a comedic one.
Yeah.
Is it possible to figure out who it is from the evidence given?
That is a good. I will say yes.
Huh.
I would say yes
because I get so pissed off.
When like in the last episode, they're like, "Oh, by the way, there was a duck.
This guy." Yeah,
he's
right.
Like, wait a minute. Well,
come on.
Yeah.
Like that mayor of Eastwood. Yeah,
mayor of Easttown.
Yeah, which I love, and I love her, but it was sort of like there was no way to figure that out.
Well, I'll say that but this is true for like I feel. Any good mystery gives you the pieces, but then it has to unveil more. Just like any investigation, you don't have all the evidence at the beginning.
Well, it can't be easy. I get it, but to protect your narrative and to keep people watching, you can't.
Introduce a whole other thing. Yeah,
it's like cheating.
It doesn't do that.
Oh, good.
It doesn't do that.
So, like, by the end of After Party, you'd be like, oh, of course.
You'd be like, oh.
Oh, why didn't I see that?
You know, there's pieces in the whole thing where you're like, oh, if you were paying attention. And like, there's some things that like, you wouldn't know even to look for,
yeah.
You know, but it's there.
Yeah. So how does your, like, how do your folks take your success?
They're very proud. They're very.
Yeah? Are you, like, a star in Ghana now?
Kind of. In fact, yes. I was there with Conan, and then like at night during the day I would hang out with Conan.
How'd you know Conan?
I've just done the show a few times. Oh, right. Okay. And then like, you know,
friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
He likes you.
Exactly.
Yeah. You named your cat after him.
I did. I really did. I didn't even tell him that. Oh. I haven't told him, but yeah, if I don't know if Conan, if you listen, our cat is named after you. I was there, and at night I'd hang out with my cousins, you know, and I would go to like, and now there's a guy, they got Burger King there, they got KFC there, which is crazy. We were at a KFC, and someone was like, are you Sam Richardson? I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. In Ghana.
In Ghana. I'm like, okay.
How do you know you? From Veep?
From Detroiters.
Really?
And I was like, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, show business is so international now.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild. Yeah, that's good and bad, but it is like people can watch anything anywhere.
It used to be that only like big action stars, like the whole world knew Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Sure.
You know.
Sure. Or Vin Diesel.
Or Vin Diesel.
Or the other, or Jason Statham.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or I just keep naming them.
See, or Bruce Willis.
Yeah, that was old days. Matt
Tony
Damon,
ja,
the Born
Matt
Identity.
Matt Damon.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, or the Asian guy.
Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan,
oh,
big.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was big Jackie Chan fan.
Were you?
Oh, my goodness. I'm talking about every movie, read his autobiography.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Love that guy.
Love that guy.
You should do a martial arts movie.
I want to.
You're going
to
be in one. You'll probably be in the next Jackie Chan movie. Is that Sam? Yeah, what's he do that scene?
Just pop up in there.
Sam has he got his ass kicked.
Like, what are we doing, Jackie? Uh-oh. Yeah. I'm the bad guy? Yeah, oh, no. Yeah,
yeah. You ever do stand-up?
Never. I've never done stand-up. I've done, like, a stand-up set where I did, like, a character, you know?
Sure.
Where I'm like, hey.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
character guy.
Yeah. Because, like, come in with what you know. Like, I'm out of my element.
Why don't you and Tim and Eric Andre and Tim and Eric do a movie?
I'd love that.
Just a pushy envelope
of
what's possible.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because like what you describe about how you work or with when you work with Tim, like it seems like Andre is just a balls of the wall kind of like fuck it, mm-hmm. you know, destructive guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's where he's going.
Right.
His commitment is like I hope something's on fire
and then,
by the time we're done with this bit.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And if not, then we'll
do it again somewhere
exactly.
else. We got to wreck a car and someone's got to be crying by the time this is over.
Otherwise, it's not complete.
But I don't know. Like, are you a Tim and Eric fan?
Yeah, very much so.
Do you know those guys?
I do. I know Tim. I don't know Eric very well.
Tim seems to be the more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Tim's out there a bit doing things.
Mm-hmm. We came up watching them.
Eric just seems to be cooking.
He's cooking
days.
And hanging out. Yeah.
You came up watching them?
We came up like when we were at Second City. You know,
they were the guys.
They were the guys because what they were doing was so new and interesting, and they were breaking form. So we're like, oh wow, okay. And so I think that what we do is, born of.
That's interesting.
Not. I wouldn't say it's like the exact. It's not a copy of, and I wouldn't say it's
no.
Like
no,
the
I get it. But like, but when you were young. Like, you know, there like each generation has these models.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it all starts with Del Close, right?
Exactly.
So everybody's sort of like, you got to do it this way to get to this place. But like, I guess for, you know, people who are into the form or the possibilities, you know, Tim and Eric must have been like, we got to watch what these dudes are doing because it's fucking out there and this is where it's going.
Right. Because we're also like, at that time we were at Second City. So we were like in Mecca of sketch comedy. We were like, in it. And we're like, what are these guys doing?
Well, it's like, it is a lot about, like, it seems like the one thing that happens in Second City and that what that created, it's still about that weird commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you going to do with it?
Right.
Like, once you got your character, you know, how are you going to push it, you know, beyond what it's, you know, can hold?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, how full can this bucket get?
Yeah. And how persistent can you be with, you know, to the point of annoying?
Yes.
Because, like, with Tim and Eric, you don't even understand why anything's happening.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But they're in it.
And then, like, on top of that, then there's the edit on top of it.
And, yeah, the different cameras they use. And, like, they're playing with sort of a lot of that local access vibe.
Yep.
Which makes everything sad and weird.
And desperate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what, yeah. Like, I think that what's evolving is that it used to hide the desperate.
Right,
yeah,
exactly. But like, exactly, used to hide it. But like, that's what's also funny is like, you hiding the desperate is hilarious.
But knowing that's what you're doing, I'm saying that like every fucking improviser's desperate.
Yes. Yes.
But now there's ownership of the desperation.
We've come into our own.
That's the tone.
Yep.
All right, buddy. We figured it out.
Yeah, good job, us.
Yeah, good talking to you, man.
Feels so good talking to you.
All right. There you go. The After Party is now streaming on Apple TV Plus. There are 3 episodes up there. Here's a lick I couldn't get out of my head. Monkey and La Fonda. Cat angels everywhere.